This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
A wiretap requires a court order.
Let me tell you something. Nobody asked anybody else whether they're gay in those holes.
That's quite an interesting thing to say. Hello, welcome to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your host for the Russ Belville Show. Glad to have you here today. The last show of 2007, so this should be quite interesting. We got a lot of things to talk about today. Of course, the major news story of this week is the assassination of Prime Minister Bhutto, Benazir Bhutto of Pakistan, which has rocked the Mideast and had serious consequences to both their elections there and our elections here in America coming up. So we'll be discussing all of the issues there and catching up on the latest news with regards to the situation there in Pakistan. This has been quite an interesting week for myself. I just got done for the past 3 days guest hosting the Bill Press Show, the number one drive time progressive talk radio show. So that was a lot of fun. And from that show, I've got a couple of clips that I'm going to be playing later on in the show. We're going to have my interview with Dwayne Martin Sr., who is a representative of the Lakota Nation, the new nation, the Indian Nation in South Dakota, North Dakota, and that area, that has declared independence. They have seceded from the United States and declared independence. So we'll be going to that interview at the bottom of this hour. And in our next hour, we'll be talking with the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for the separation of church and state on the issues of religion and in our politics these days. So we've got plenty to cover there. And as usual, we want to also cover all of the news stories that have happened this week because, well, you know my situation. I'm just a regular working guy like a lot of you. You know, when I'm not doing this weekend talk radio show, I have a 40-hour job that I work for a living. And, well, you know, I'm a busy person, and you're probably a busy person, too. You don't always have the time to catch up with the newspapers or the evening news. So at the top of the Russ Belville Show, every week, I like to help you catch up on this week's hottest news stories with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
Former Prime Minister Bhutto is assassinated in Pakistan. Is General Musharraf partly to blame?
There was a clear bullet injury to her head. When we bathed her, we saw that.
The Iowa caucuses take place this Thursday, and then only 10 more months of campaign commercials. Mike Huckabee shoots birds in Iowa to underscore his nuanced understanding of complex geopolitical socioeconomic issues.
Each of these birds gave their lives for the campaign.
Then he proves his foreign policy chops responding to Benazir Bhutto's assassination in Pakistan.
Of those eastern borders near Afghanistan.
Uh-huh. Mitt Romney's campaign is in dire straits as the New England newspapers trash his Mitt-flopping and endorse John McCain.
I believe that abortion should be safe and legal in this country.
In the San Francisco Zoo, a tiger escapes, killing a teenage boy and injuring two young men. Were they taunting the tiger?
Tiger brand coffee is a real treat. Even tigers prefer a cup of it to real meat.
Home prices dropped 6.7% over the past year, an all-time record plunge.
And so we've had a pretty good economic run here in the country.
Chief Executive Bush pocket vetoes a bill funding the Iraq quagmire because it would allow our veterans to sue the Iraqi government.
If Congress sends this bill back to me, I'm going to veto it again.
Which he can't do because Congress was in session. Well, for 11 seconds anyway, to prevent his recess appointments. Oh, and yes, tonight, Saturday night here, the New England Patriots go for the first NFL perfect season since 1972 to be simulcast for the first time on three different networks. And it's just a shame for the Patriots to have that perfect season, only to go to the Super Bowl and lose to my Green Bay Packers. That's right, Brett Favre and the Packers will overcome the Cowboys in Texas Stadium. Brett will overcome his 0-9 record in Texas Stadium. And to complete the Cinderella story, the Packers will defeat the heavily favored Patriots, making a perfect bookend to Brett Favre's career. He beat the Patriots in his first Super Bowl. He'll beat the Patriots in his last Super Bowl. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. You heard it here first. Yeah, I know. There's probably not a whole hell of a lot of chance for that. But, you know, hey, I'm the eternal Packer optimist. That's just the way I think. You always got to stick up for your team. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, welcome back to the weekend, like I said. And we want to cover some of the issues. And also, let me remind you, our phone number here is 866-5577-377. And we'll be taking calls toward the bottom of the hour. It's kind of end of the year here, so no specific topic. It's open phone lines. Anything you want to get off your chest, any topic you want to broach toward the end of our end of this hour, we'll get to that at our phone lines, 866-5577-377. It's not just a phone number. It's a great hand in liar's poker. But, of course, the number one story we have to get to here is the assassination of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. And like I was saying, I was guest hosting the Bill Press Show these past 3 days while Bill Press was on vacation. And the show runs from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, I'm here in Portland, Oregon, which meant I was getting up at 2 in the morning so that I could be on the air at 3. And I was on the air, I guess it was Thursday, at about 5:20 a.m. my time when the news of Benazir Bhutto's assassination came through the wires. And I had to break that news to the national audience, which was kind of a first for my career here, having to broach some serious news topics like that. It was quite an experience, I got to tell you. And as the news reports came in, it was very unclear exactly what was going on here with respect to Bhutto's assassination. The first reports that we had come in said that she had been killed by the explosion. A car bomb had gone off near her motorcade, and that was the original cause of death that we had heard, is that shrapnel from the explosion had killed her. Later on, we got reports that it was gunshots from someone riding nearby on a motorcycle had shot her in the head and neck, killing her, and then blew himself up as a suicide bomber. And just recently, maybe it was even just last night, the videos have surfaced showing the gunman holding the pistol and firing three times. So it seemed pretty cut and dried that we had a situation there where the prime minister had been, former prime minister had been assassinated. Now the latest news that we're getting out, I'm checking this off of CNN.com. The latest news that we're getting here is that the Pakistani officials now are trying to claim that Mrs. Bhutto lost her life from skull fracture, from a head injury. They are saying, the official Pakistani government statements here, is that she died as she was trying to recoil from the attack. She fell and smacked her head against a lever that was for her sunroof, and it's the blow to the head that killed her rather than the gunshot or the suicide bombing, which everyone is disputing now. There's numerous eyewitnesses in dispute of this, and of course the videotape that we've seen come out disputes this as well. And we got this tape here from Sherry Raymond. Sherry Raymond is one of the leaders here, one of the officials in the Pakistani People's Party, the party of Prime Minister Bhutto. And she was interviewed on CNN, and she's talking about how this is a possibility of a cover-up from the Pakistani government side, in that she saw Prime Minister Bhutto when she was injured, and she was one of the people that helped to bathe her body before it was taken for her funeral and her burial. And this was the quote from Sherry Raymond.
There were clear bullet injuries to her head. When we bathed her, we saw that.
There were clear bullet injuries to her head. So we've got to question, why would the Musharraf government come forth with this new statement that she was killed by a head injury? You know, for those of us out here in the West, it might seem like not that much of a big issue. You know, whether she was killed by the bomb blast, killed by the gunshot, or killed by the head injury after the attack, it would seem to all of us that it would be irrelevant because she was killed in an attack. But we're talking about the Muslim world here. We're talking about the Eastern philosophies. And in the Muslim world, there's this high price, there's this high recognition of someone who dies as a martyr. And there's some theory here that the government might be trying to discount her martyrdom by showing her death as an accident rather as being the victim of an assassination attempt, a successful assassination attempt. So that might be what's going on with this redirection of her cause of death. And we'll be keeping an eye on that as well as we go throughout the show. And again, if you've got comments on this, if you've got theories as to why Benazir Bhutto's death might be being covered up by the Musharraf government, did the Musharraf government have a hand in this? There's the email that came out from Wolf Blitzer over there at CNN talking about how this was definitely a that Bhutto was going to be blaming Musharraf. She was saying that he was not providing enough security and that there were elements within his own government and military that wanted to see her dead. So I'm sure this story will keep coming out and more details will make themselves clear. Now, when we come back from the break, I want to talk, or want to take you to our interview that we had with, or I'm sorry, when we come back from the break, we'll be discussing our Lunatic Fringe Award, excuse me, end of the year. Everything's a little chaotic right now. Our Lunatic Fringe Award for 2007 for the Cable News Talking Heads, and at the bottom of the hour, our interview with Lakota Nation Representative Dwayne Martin Sr. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show. I'm Russ Belville. Stay tuned right after the break. We'll be right back.
Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Welcome back to the weekend. It's 21 after the hour here with live progressive talk on your weekend. I'm Radical Russ Belville. Glad to be here on the last show of 2007, excuse me, as we look forward to 2008. And as the year approaches its end, just like many shows, I like to do my little year in review. And it's been quite a year for all of the lunatics out there on the fringes of the right wing.
The lunatic is on the grass.
Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the guano loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents
the
Lunatic Fringe Award, an award for the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. And this week's edition is our annual year-end awards. This will be our 2007 year-end awards for the Lunatic Fringe. So now this one we're going to have to divide up a little bit because there's so many lunatics out there on the right wing that we need to divide it. Kind of like the, I guess you'd say like the Grammy Awards, perhaps. And so this category will be our pundit Lunatic Fringe Award for 2007. So all of the cable news punditocracy out there will take a look out. And our first candidate is the radio merchant of vitriol and hatred for anything not white, straight, Christian, and male, Michael Wiener Savage, who says that people like me, atheists, or as I call us, people of reason, have lots in common with Islamic terrorists.
Now, what would a devout Muslim radical have in common with atheists? Answer: hatred of Christianity and hatred of Jews.
Now, he might be onto something, you know, because when I think of all the people that I'm not too fond of, you know, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Mitt Romney, Mike Huckabee, Rudy Giuliani, you know, those guys, they always proclaim to be Christian. Oh, and there's Joe Lieberman, too, who I don't like much either. And what do you know? He's Jewish. So maybe he's onto something there. But, you know, as a person of reason, I also have a lot of problems with the Islamic fanaticists, too.
You can shove it up your pipe.
Whoa.
I don't want to hear any more about Islam.
Okay.
I don't want to hear one more word about Islam.
Oh.
Take your religion and shove it up your behind.
Well,
I'm sick of you.
Okay, geez. Okay, no more about Islam. But poor Mr. Wiener, he's just too predictably rabid to win our annual award. A truly dangerous lunatic fringer is one who can slip into mainstream conversation every once in a while. So our next candidate has several entries for the lunatic fringe category this year, including his annual artificial war on Christmas and exacting perverse delight at a Florida college student being tasered by the police.
Don't tase me, bro!
That's right. He's our friend from the Fox Noise Channel, the Falufa Boy, Bill O'Reilly. When Bill is looking for a fine restaurant meal that doesn't serve falafels, he occasionally dines with the Reverend Al Sharpton in Harlem, where he visits a famous black-owned restaurant called Sylvia's.
And I couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between
Sylvia's restaurant and any other restaurant in New York City. I mean, it was exactly the same, even though it's run by blacks, primarily black patronship. It was the same.
What do you know? Bill just couldn't believe that black people could not only run a professional restaurant, but also that the mostly black customers weren't running around in do-rags and baggy pants screaming out things like,
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
I'm sorry, Mr. O'Reilly, what was that?
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Well, okay, Mr. O'Reilly, I think I can get you some iced tea.
Kiss my ass, bust the cap on the Moet. Because I don't
want to
hear that crap.
Is that enough iced tea for you? But we can't give the award to Bill O'Reilly because he won last year's award for his performance on the original War on Christmas.
This is an assault to diminish Christmas for secular progressive reasons.
Yeah, so let's take a look at our next candidate, a man who cheerleads for war while he sat out Vietnam with a cyst on his butt. A man who champions family values while packing Viagra for a solo trip to the Dominican Republic, which just so happens to be known for its underage prostitutes, and a man who said that the problem with drugs is that too many white people get away with being druggies while he had his Hispanic maid doctor shop for him to feed his 30 Oxycontin a day habit. Yes, it's Rush Limbaugh, and it was a banner year for Limbaugh, who, when not mocking 12-year-olds without health insurance...
They send the kid out to lie. They filled this kid's head filled with lies just they have some of these soldiers.
Or calling Barack Obama and Halle Berry African-Americans...
Hey, Barack Obama has picked up another endorsement. African-American actress Halle Berry.
Yeah, or when not contemplating the similarities between Obama and Osama.
The cable news networks are pronouncing his name Osama. And I wonder if that is to avoid any comparisons with Obama.
Yeah, so Limbaugh, when he's not doing those things, he spends his time talking with other lunatics on the phone who degrade our fighting men and women who disagree with endless occupation of the Middle East.
They like to pull these soldiers to come up out of the blue and stop the media.
The phony soldiers.
The phony soldiers. Unfortunately, Mr. Limbaugh is ineligible for the Lunatic Fringe of the Year, cable news edition, because he's been inducted to our Lunatic Fringe Hall of Fame. So our winner this year is the Mormon mouth of misanthropic anti-Muslim madness, the $50 million man, CNN's Glenn Beck. Now, you'll remember when the fires were happening in Southern California, he had this to say about the victims of the forest fires.
I think there is a handful of people who hate America. Unfortunately for them, a lot of them are losing their homes in a forest fire today.
Yeah, that's awfully compassionate conservative of you there. Yes, Glenn Beck, who had a very important question for Representative Keith Ellison, the first Muslim to be elected to the U.S. Congress.
Sir, prove to me that you are not working with our enemies. And I know you're not. I'm not accusing you of being an enemy, but that's the way I feel, and I think a lot of Americans will feel that way.
Uh-huh. Beck also gets bonus hypocrisy points when talking about attacks on religion. When he was asked about his fellow magic underwear-wearing descendant of the god from Star System Kolob, multiple choice Mitt Romney.
Why are we going to a candidate and asking about religion? Who cares? If you really, America, you really want to know about Mormons, believe me, ask a Mormon.
So Glenn Beck, for exposing the hypocrisy of the Republican Party and the xenophobia in your fear of Muslims, you win our annual Lunatic Fringe Award. Yes, congratulations. Plenty of the lunatic fringes out there, and we'll be documenting them here on the Russ Belville Show. They're not going to get away with it. When we come back from our break, we're going to go to my interview with Dwayne Martin Sr. from the Lakota Nation on their secession from the United States. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show live on the weekends. I'm Russ Belville. We'll be right back after this break.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back to the weekend. 35 after, I'm Radical Russ, your red state refugee, bringing you progressive talk on the weekends from an average regular working guy just like you. Yeah, you can't get much farther outside the beltway than me. Born and raised in Idaho, moved to Portland, Oregon. Got the regular man's working perspective on these issues. And one of the issues I wanted to come back to, this was something I broke on my show a couple of weeks ago, was the independence, the declaration of secession of the Lakota Indian Nation. The multiple tribes there had gotten together, and they had gone to Washington, D.C., and officially withdrew from all of the treaties that were signed in the 19th century, treaties in Laramie, Fort Laramie, Wyoming, and other treaties, and officially declared their independence from the United States. And this is a story that's kind of been given a collective shrug by the mass media out there, and I'm not going to let this story die. Our legacy of treatment of the Native American people is one of the most shameful legacies in our nation's history, and if we're not going to address it, then it's no surprise that the Native American people want to address it on their own. And to that extent, I want to go here to the phones here. I've got an interview that I'd like to broadcast. This was recorded yesterday when I guest hosted the Bill Press Show. And Mr. Dwayne Martin Sr. from the Lakota Nation. And Mr. Martin, I didn't want to mispronounce your native name, so if you could pronounce that for me so I don't mess it up.
Well, my name is pronounced Chanupa Gluhamani, a.k.a. Dwayne Martin Sr.
Chanupa Gluhamani. Yeah, I just played that quote from George Bush regarding tribal sovereignty, and this is definitely going to be coming to the test. The Lakota Nation has just declared sovereignty and seceded from the United States by withdrawing from the treaties of Fort Wyoming. Tell our listeners a little bit about your struggle for freedom and why.
Well, first of all, we've undertook this scenario because of the simple fact that, you know, the federal government has never lived up to the provisions that were, illustrated on the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868. But there are other treaties, you know, similar to our nations within Turtle Island that haven't been kept. And then, like I said, maybe a small amount of the provisions were upheld, you know, and that's kind of non-symbolic when you have a country, you know, that, you know, has a name that was already named, you know, I think that got turned on America, but the fact is, you know, my people have been struggling trying to get, their rightful place within the Council of Nations to this godforsaken day. And so throughout, you know, the 33 years of struggling with, you know, certain treaty meetings and even with, you know, issues pertaining to our recognition in the UN, this government has never represented us properly. And as I said, you know, the provisions that were, you know, supposed to be upheld through the treaty, you know, they were only minimal. Yeah. And so, you know, that's
so these are, this is a definite, but this is definite secession you're talking about forming
exactly
a new nation inside the United States known as Lakota.
Exactly.
Okay, now, this nation, according to what I was reading, and by the way, if anyone's interested in this, please check out the website, LakotaFreedom.com. That's L-A-K-O-T-A, LakotaFreedom.com. And the interesting part of this would be the property ownership. According to the website, it told me that your nation is going to encompass parts of North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Wyoming, and Montana, which your claims have been illegally homesteaded for years. How is this going to affect, you know, the laws, the taxes, all of the issues that the residents of those areas, now that they're residents of Lakota, how will that impact their relationship with the United States?
Well, first of all, if they, you know, want to get away from paying taxes, hey, they can join us. Welcome aboard for everyone. But one of the things that we have...
Tax-free, huh? Okay.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, the five tri-state areas that you have mentioned, you know, we got a secret weapon in disguise that we're going to be utilizing, you know, when we start getting, you know, to the point where we need to go. But first of all, we have to understand it's up to them to meet with us in good relations. We're not saying they're gonna. And, you know, other nations are really, you know, willing to take a serious look at what we have been talking about since, you know, we unilaterally removed and withdrew from the treaties. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we have the highest, you know, mortality death rate amongst the adult male on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. I mean, it's You know, it's past national average. And,
absolutely.
You know,
I grew up in Idaho originally and had many friends who had come from reservations in Idaho, Fort Hall Indian Reservation and a few other locations in the state of Idaho. And some of the statistics here are just mortifying. Like you said, the lowest life expectancy, 44 years old for Lakota men, the highest death rate, 3 times the national average in infant mortality, 8 times the national average in tuberculosis. And here's the one that really affected me. The median income of your people being between $2,600 and $3,500 a year. And do you point the blame here at the policies of our federal government and our Department of Indian Affairs for that situation?
Exactly. You know, the Bureau of Indian Affairs have never been trusted from day one. You know, their puppet regime, such as the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, has never, ever stood, you know, in good acceptance for the Lakota people. If they have, you wouldn't have an outlaw government running rapidly on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And we just had one of our elected council members trying to smuggle in 21 pounds of marijuana. Now, I kid you not, if that had been someone like you or myself, and we were going to try to do something because of, the poor economy, poverty, and so forth, you and I would be locked up within a heartbeat. Now, that's it.
Yeah. You know, there's been some other conflicts between people. I follow this issue quite a bit over in Oregon. I'm the associate director of the Oregon chapter of Normal, so I follow the issues with regards to medical marijuana and specifically with regards to industrial hemp. Wasn't it your people, was it the Oglala Sioux, who were trying to grow industrial hemp and the DEA basically shut them down?
Well, exactly. They were trying to start commerce, but subsequently to that, you know, that little thing was blocked out. But You know, back in some of the early wars, you know, they used a lot of Native nations to grow this, industrial hemp products so they can create ropes and, you know, numerous other things that would be efficient enough to help the war out. And then finally, you know, they said no. But, you know, when you're a sovereign nation, you should have the opportunity to do as you please according to law. But we have laws and provisions within our own because we're a matriarchal society. But the fact, you know, that we have never, ever given that opportunity to utilize our efforts, this is the reason why we had to remove ourselves from the treaty.
Now, you guys have delivered packets to the State Department and to foreign embassies indicating your status as a sovereign nation and having seceded from the United States. I'm looking on your website here at LakotaFreedom.com, and apparently this is a confirmed rumor that Russian President Vladimir Putin has possibly issued a threat to recognize the Lakota Nation. Is this true?
Well, to my knowledge, it's a rumor. Because, you know, all news is good news, but the fact is, there has to be, you know, a little, you know, minute understanding about hope. But most of the time, you know, we can't really rely on rumors. But I do, you know, have, you know, some stout confidence in the Bolivian embassy and their government, because Bolivia is the only one that has indigenous president, you know.
That's
Evo
right,
Morales.
Evo Morales. That's right, Evo Morales of Bolivia. And I also heard there were some rumors about possibly Hugo Chavez of Venezuela offering support as well. Now, do you feel you're going to be engaged in any sort of direct conflict with the federal government, or is this just going to be handled in diplomacy and in the courts?
Well, first of all, we have to understand, when you undertake something like this, and people such as ourselves, as the delegation that went to Washington, D.C., one thing can come about of this. They can assassinate us for doing according to the law. But when you back somebody into a corner or even try to incarcerate an animal, eventually you're going to get bit. But that bit's going to be a worthy fight because you have done nothing to give this understanding, man, to this individual and his people to become free and, you know, compatible and acceptable within this nation that's supposed to symbolize that, that historical, exploitation of what freedom consists of. But we, the Lakota people, have been struggling with these for the past 139 years because when U.S. Constitution exonerates the fact that the treaties are the supreme law of the land, then why should we, as the First Nations people in Turtle Island, be subjugated to colonial policy? That's an insult. Yeah, genocide to humanity.
I want to thank you, Chinupa Gluhamani, also known as Dwayne Martin Sr. from the Lakota Nation. Check them out at LakotaFreedom.com. I'll keep everyone updated with your latest news. And thank you so much, sir, for stopping in and making your nation known to our listeners.
Yeah, thank you for having us, man. Freedom to you all.
That's Mr. Dwayne Martin Sr., who I interviewed yesterday on the Bill Press Show. I'm Russ Belville. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show, your weekend home for live progressive talk. We'll be right back.
This is The Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back to the weekend, 50 after the hour, end of the year, we're running out of consonants. So welcome back, glad to have you here. Just finished up my interview with one of the leaders of the Lakota Nation, Dwayne Martin Sr. I want to encourage everyone to check out the website, LakotaFreedom.com. And when you check out some of the statistics that are facing the Lakota Nation, you know, you would want to declare independence, too. If you were being treated that way by your government, you'd want to set out on your own, too. So and today happens to be the 117th anniversary of the massacre at Wounded Knee. And the Lakota Nation was going to declare their boundaries today. I haven't checked up the website since then. They said they were going to have that up today. Check that out at LakotaFreedom.com. I've also got a map up on my website, a Google map. You can click the link through RadicalRuss.net, and it's what I interpreted the Lakota boundaries to be based on their treaties and the territories and the various Indian reservations. I could be wrong, but we'll get the update from the Lakota people hopefully later on this weekend. I want to turn back to this Benazir Bhutto assassination. There's been a lot of the news that's been flying around about the potential blame for the assassination of Bhutto. Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for this act, but there was many theories going around about Musharraf's possible involvement in this, whether directly or indirectly. Now, the indirect idea here is that he did not provide, you know, reasonable security. Her people had been asking since October. Now, in October, when Bhutto returned to the country, she had a major rally, and there was a car bombing to attack her motorcade, where over, I think, 130 people passed away. There hasn't been any serious investigation into that car bombing, and following that car bombing, Bhutto and her staff had been asking for better security. They wanted 4 police cars to be surrounding them at all times, tinted windows. They had asked for electronic jammers that would jam electronic signals that might blow up IEDs. And all of this was rejected by Musharraf. So Bhutto had sent an email to one of her advisors, and that advisor had sent it on to CNN's Wolf Blitzer and told him not to reveal it unless she was killed. And in this email, Bhutto points out how she had been asking for the better security, and said that she would hold Musharraf responsible if anything were to happen to her. So the country of Pakistan has gone, is in flames now. There's rioting going on, major unrest as Pakistan and Musharraf try to crack down on the rioting. And the other issue here with regards to Pakistan, of course, is their nuclear capabilities. I also got the opportunity to interview Joe Cirincione from the Center for American Progress when I was over at the Bill Press Show. And he points out the fact that, you know, Pakistan's a nuclear-armed nation with a major jihadist, radical, extremist Muslim population. There's a significant al-Qaeda presence in Pakistan. And also the rumors that Osama bin Laden was still hold up in the Waziristan region of Pakistan. And we just wondered, you know, if George Bush hadn't taken his eye off the ball, if he hadn't distracted our resources from Afghanistan in the pursuit of Osama bin Laden at Tora Bora, if instead of going to Iraq and distracting us from the real terrorism issues at hand, where would we be now? Would Bhutto still be alive if we'd have actually gone after Osama and gone after al-Qaeda, put down the Taliban for good in Afghanistan? You know, the Taliban is resurgent back in Afghanistan, as well as al-Qaeda. But in doing this research for this, I unearthed something that just brought a chill to me here. This is an interview that Benazir Bhutto did back in October for the BBC with David Frost. You may remember David Frost from his Nixon interviews. Listen really closely to Benazir Bhutto talking about the potential threats against her life.
And he also had dealings with Omar Sheikh, the man who murdered Osama bin Laden.
What was that?
And he also had dealings with Omar Sheikh, the man who murdered Osama bin Laden.
And that came across. She was talking about all the Al-Qaeda and all the people that might have it in for her. And she talks about Omar Sheikh, or as we call him here in America, Sheikh Omar. Sheikh Omar was the one who was behind the killing, the heinous beheading of the journalist Daniel Pearl. And the quote there, I mean...
Omar Sheikh, the man who murdered Osama bin Laden.
Had you heard that Osama bin Laden had been murdered? I mean, this quote went over this BBC interview, and David Frost didn't even bat an eye during the interview. He just went on with another question, and I thought this was quite the bombshell that Osama bin Laden had been murdered. And are we getting so blacked out and so censored here in America with our news media that a major story like that didn't get reported here in America? Because the way that David Frost treated it, he treated it as if it was just an average, everyday story. Like, yeah, everybody knows that. Osama bin Laden was murdered? Did anyone catch that? Did anyone ever hear anything about that? I know I didn't. So I'll be taking a better look at that as we get to the next week's show, because that came up just last evening. I also wanted to bring up another story here with regards to this is our healthcare industry here in America. And this was a situation that happened down in California where a woman was waiting for a liver transplant, and she was insured by Cigna, the big health insurance giant. And she needed a life-saving liver transplant. She had applied. The doctor said, it's a go. Let's get this liver transplant done. Everybody was ready to do it. But Cigna ignored the medical decisions and called the transplant experimental and therefore denied coverage for the liver transplant, overruling the urgent appeals of the doctors and the nurses. And this is, you know, what goes on in our healthcare industry is we have the right wingers talking about socialized medicine, and why would we want to put a bureaucrat between our doctor and our treatment? And I just return and say, why would you want to put an insurance company between your doctor and your treatment? Why does the doctor have to go talk to some guy sitting in a cubicle, some bean counter, some accountant over at some insurance agency who wants to deny your coverage in order for them to make a profit? Well, there was such a protest against this. The California Nurses Association and family and friends turned up the heat, and Cigna capitulated. Yes, the insurance giant turned around and reversed their decision and said they would go ahead and approve the liver transplant for this 17-year-old girl, Nataline Sarkeesian, at the UCLA Medical Center. And they said, okay, after all the pressure, after a week's worth of pressure, after all of the negative publicity, we'll go ahead and approve this liver transplant for this 17-year-old girl. Unfortunately, it was too late. By the time they approved the liver transplant, 17-year-old Nataline Sarkeesian passed away. Passed away right before they relented and decided that they would give her some coverage. So ask yourself if that's the kind of healthcare system you want to have here in America, where an insurance company can deny you your life-saving treatment, even if your doctor orders it. Now, when we come back from the break, at the top of the hour, we're going to go to our next Lunatic Fringer for the year, and we'll also be having an interview with the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your weekend live progressive talk host. We'll be right back.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Well, you can have more iced tea. I don't have a problem with that. Welcome back to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, bringing you live progressive talk here on the weekends. Glad to have you here for our last show of 2007, and it's been one heck of a year. It's been my debut in talk radio, and it's been quite exciting to have this new job, speaking to people all across the North American continent. Check out my website at radicalrust.net. I've been keeping a map, one of those Google maps. I've been keeping a map of all my callers, all my interviews, and all the stories that I've been covering, well, at least since November. So find out where you at and where you at compared to everyone else by using the Google map at RadicalRust.net. Also, we're having some trouble with our phone lines today, so unfortunately I can't take any live calls, but if you have some opinions you'd like to make known to the North American continent, send me an email, radicalruss@gmail.com, and I'll bring those comments up on next week's show, our first show of 2008. But to conclude 2007 here, we want to get a few things off the board here. Coming up in the next segment, I'll be having my interview that I did on the Bill Press Show this week with Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And with as much Jesus as been infected into our political campaigns this year, it was good to talk to someone who had some common sense about the issue. So stay tuned for that in our next segment. But being that this is the end of the year, we've got to do some of our end of the year countdowns. Last hour, we had our Lunatic Fringe Award for 2007 for the cable news talking heads. Now we're going to turn to the preachers and politicians.
Is on the cross.
Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the cross.
From the guano loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban. And the cable news punditocracy. The Russ Belville Show presents
the
Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. Although this time it's the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quotes of the year, because this is our year-end awards. You know, so many ignorant, hateful quotes to cull through for 2007. I've pulled some of the best ones, or some of the worst ones, I guess, depending on your point of view, from the Lunatic Fringe, and there were so many we had to divide it into separate categories. So this category, again, is the Politicians and Preachers Award, and specifically here, let's start off with our first preacher here to win a Lunatic Fringe Award for 2007. He passed away this year. The Reverend, and I use that term loosely, the Reverend Jerry Falwell passed away this year, but he didn't pass away without leaving us some more gems of lunatic fringery. Let's go back to the archives here. Back in 2001, right after September 11th had occurred, Jerry Falwell appeared on the 700 Club with the Reverend, and again, I use the term loosely, the Reverend Pat Robertson, and he had this to say about what the cause of 9/11 might be.
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
So you remember that quote back from 2001, that it was us secularists, us people of reason, and the atheists and the feminists and all those people who caused 9/11, caused God to lift his protective cloak from around America and allow 9/11 to happen, which is kind of strange, because I was wondering where God's protective cloak was back in 1941 when the Japanese invaded Pearl Harbor, or where God's protective cloak was, say, back in 1812 when the British burned down the White House. Apparently, God's pretty selective with his protective cloak. But before his death, a couple weeks before his death this year in 2007, he was interviewed by CNN's Christiane Amanpour, who asked him about that 9/11 quote and whether or not he would repudiate his words from 2001.
If we decide to change all the rules on which this Judeo-Christian nation was built, we cannot expect the Lord to put his shield of protection around us as he has in the past.
So you still stand by
it? I stand right by it.
So Jerry Falwell goes to his grave still condemning feminists and secularists and homosexuals for the events of 9/11. It'd be just a little too difficult to blame 19 mostly Saudi Arabian hijackers for that. Apparently it was all our fault. But unfortunately, Jerry can't win the 2007 annual award because it is only eligible for people who are still alive. So we're going to turn to another preacher who made the list this year, Pat Robertson, the one who started the whole thing about God punishing us for 9/11. He also had numerous other reasons God punished us. He claimed that God punished the wouldn't protect the city of Dover, Pennsylvania, after they rejected intelligent design in their schools. So apparently he's got a pretty vengeful God working on his side there. But one of the things that Robertson has always been strong against is against gay marriage, against gay rights, against abortion, any of these traditional family value sort of issues. So it was a huge surprise when we ended up with this endorsement from Rudolph, or from Pat Robertson for Rudolph Giuliani.
Today it is my pleasure to announce my support for America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani.
So Pat Robertson endorsed Rudy Giuliani for president. The guy, Rudy Giuliani, the guy who's a serial adulterer, married three times, was cheating on his second wife while having an adulterous affair with his third wife, who is now his third wife, having that affair being paid for by the taxpayers of New York City as they ferried her around with a full protective entourage, and New York Police Department was walking her dog and chauffeuring her friends. They were getting it on at an apartment building that was set up for the World Trade Center workers. We had Rudy Giuliani, famous for dressing in drag. And when his wife kicked him out of the house, he shacked up with a gay couple and was always very strong supporter of gay rights. That's who Pat Robertson endorsed. And the sheer hypocrisy of Pat Robertson coming out and endorsing Giuliani is just beyond the pale. Unfortunately, I can't give the award to Pat Robertson this year because that's just kind of the expectation of Pat Robertson. His lunatic fringery is so commonplace now that it seems inappropriate to give him the award. So let me move on to our third candidate, and this fella, and I'm not even going to give him the benefit of calling him Reverend. He calls himself Reverend, but he's nowhere close to that in my mind. This guy's name is Fred Phelps, and you may know about him. He is the head of the Westboro Baptist Church out in Topeka, Kansas, and his ongoing campaign has been the God hates gays. I'm not going to use the word that he says, but the God hates gays campaign, and how all of the ill that befalls America has to do with the fact that we tolerate homosexuality. And according to Fred Phelps, that is the cause of all the bad things that happen to America. Most specifically, Fred Phelps and his Klan go out to the funerals. They go to the funerals of American soldiers who have died in Iraq, and they have little signs that say things like, thank God for IEDs. And his theory here is that the American soldiers, heterosexual American soldiers, are being killed by IEDs because they work for the government and the government supports homosexuals. Despite the fact that our American government does not give any sort of legal protection or recognition to homosexuals, he still believes that. And so this was an interview with Fred Phelps on CNN with Rick Sanchez, where he tells us how God is punishing America.
They don't want me preaching that God is punishing America by killing those servicemen. And if that's why he's doing it and sending them home in body bags, then the appropriate forum of choice would be their funerals.
Yeah, that's the true lunatic fringery that we find on the evangelical right. And, of course, a lot of the evangelical population will distance themselves from Fred Phelps. Nice try, guys. He's only preaching what you say you believe in. You say you believe literally in the Bible. Well, then Fred Phelps is preaching what you literally believe in. But, unfortunately, I can't give the award to Fred Phelps either because... Well, because I hate him. I don't want to give him anything. So we are going to round out the politician and preacher edition. We had one politician who outdid all of the preachers this year, outdid all of the other politicians this year, a man who has raised hypocrisy, self-loathing, and self-denial to such a high level that he's now just become a cultural touchstone and a laughingstock throughout the world. You know who I'm talking about.
Nasty, bad, naughty boy.
I am not gay.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
There's a new me coming out.
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
That's right, Senator Larry Craig, my former home state senator of Idaho. For your self-loathing, self-denial, and obvious closet caseness, you win our Lunatic Fringe Award for 2007 Politicians and Preachers Edition. Congratulations, Senator Craig, and thanks for sticking around in the Congress and just being a constant highlight to the hypocrisy and the self-loathing of the Republican Party. You definitely wear it well. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, talking about politics and religion and how bad it's gotten in the 2008 campaign. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back to the show. 22 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and I want to talk a little bit about religion and politics at this point. That's right, religion and politics, and we have seen so much of this in this upcoming campaign for president. And coming up in the next segment, I'm going to have my interview with the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. I did the Bill Press show the past 3 days, got to fill in for Bill Press out there on the East Coast while he was on vacation. I got to do this interview with Reverend Lynn, so we'll have that in the next segment. It's a little too long for this segment. But this problem with religion in American politics, you know, I don't know if anyone else remembers this, but I remember growing up and the topic of religion, just among, you know, casual conversation with people, was always considered to be kind of rude, kind of not the subject that you bring up in polite conversation. And I always thought this was part of the American fabric. You know, this is how we think of religion, is that everybody has the right to believe what they choose to believe, but it's a personal sort of an issue. It's not something we try to force on other people. And nowhere do we see this more than in the Republican side. We get guys like Mike Huckabee out there who just can't go a single sentence without telling us how much he loves Jesus.
I believe there is a God. I believe there's a God who is active in the creation process.
And then, of course, Mitt Romney, he's facing the problem of being a Mormon, and there's a lot of people on the evangelical side who believe that Mormonism is a cult and it's not a true brand of Christianity. So Mitt Romney has to constantly make the God point.
I believe in God. Believe in the Bible. Believe Jesus Christ is my Savior.
And so this is this constant battle going on between the candidates. I mean, we see it on the Democratic side, too, during the debates when they're asked what is their favorite Bible verse, or, you know, asking about these religious questions. And I just want to go back to the Constitution and what our founding fathers intended. It's very clear in the Constitution when you look at the article that reads, "There shall be no religious tests for any office of public trust in the United States." And while we don't have a legal religious test, as in someone has to belong to a certain church to run for office, it's becoming a cultural test, and I think this is a bad thing for America. It's got to the point where every candidate out there has to admit, has to cop to some sort of religious belief, and not just any religious belief. They have to be one of the approved religious beliefs. I mean, we have Representative Keith Ellison in Minnesota, who is the only Muslim in Congress, and we have Representative Pete Stark from California, who's the only representative who admits to being an atheist, admits to being a non-believer. And so when I hear people like Mike Huckabee say things like this:
if they want a president who doesn't believe in God, there's probably plenty of choices.
I'm looking around and thinking, all right, who are these choices? Because for people like me, people of reason, people who are either atheists or secular or agnostic or, you know, deists, Wiccans, whatever, people who don't belong to any of the mainstream Protestant or Catholic religions, where are our candidates? Where are the candidates that are going to stick up for our religious rights? You know, this is why we have an absolute separation and a wall between church and state. You know, we see it in Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptist Association when he specifies there will be an absolute wall between church and state. And I always try to point this out to people that that this is something that was not invented necessarily to protect the state from the church, although that is part of its function, but it's also to protect the church from the state. See, once we involve politics and religion together, we get into this problem of exactly what kind of religion is the nation going to follow. I have a lot of people that I discuss this issue with back in Idaho, which, again, is a pretty conservative area, a lot of religious questions there. And they ask, you know, they say, well, America was founded as a Christian nation. You know, you look back and there's nothing further from the truth. I mean, you can look to the 1791 Treaty of Tripoli, which stated, as the United States is in no way founded as a Christian nation. This treaty was passed unanimously by the 4th U.S. Congress and signed by the 2nd President. So, I mean, I think that's pretty representative of the thought back there in those times. And if we're going to be a religious nation, just what religion are we going to be? I mean, if we're going to be a Christian nation, which brand of Christianity? Right? Because we could start off by asking, well, if we're a Christian nation, are we a Catholic Christian nation or are we a Protestant Christian nation? We're a Protestant Christian nation. Okay, well, if we're a Protestant Christian nation, are we a Lutheran Christian nation, or are we a Baptist Christian nation, or are we a Pentecostal Christian nation? Oh, we're a Baptist Christian nation. Okay, well, if we're a Baptist Christian nation, are we a Southern Baptist Christian nation, a Progressive Baptist Christian nation, a Free Will Baptist Christian nation? And what of all the other religions, the Lutherans and the Wesleyans and the Pentecostals and United Church and the Quakers? And, you know, this is the problem, is that if you're going to start defining us as a Christian nation, you have to start defining which Christian nation. The United States was meant to be a secular nation. There is no Jesus, no God, and no Bible in any of our founding documents. If you look at the Declaration, if you look at the Constitution, you will not find God, Bible, or Jesus in any of those documents. Now, you will find references to nature's God, and you will find references to Creator. Those choices of language are not accidental. These were Enlightenment-era men, very, very well educated, and they didn't pick their words lightly. They knew exactly what they were trying to say. Jefferson's religion was really more that of deism. And the idea behind deism is that, yes, there may be a creative force out there, but it is so big and infinite that really would not have any bearing on our lives. And in fact, Jefferson actually took a copy of the Bible and removed all of the religious mumbo-jumbo, all of the miracles, all of the supernatural occurrences, and edited it down just to Jesus' words. It's called the Jefferson Bible. You should take a look at it sometime. So somebody who is editing the Bible and taking out all the gaudy parts, you can't really say this was somebody who meant to found a Christian nation. And we take back a look at Thomas Paine, author of Age of Reason, who was a devout atheist who pointed out all of the problems with religion in our country. So when we come back from this break at the bottom of the hour, I want to get to that interview with the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. If you've got an opinion on this issue, you can write it down at my blog, RadicalRuss.net. You can also send me an email, RadicalRuss@gmail.com. When we come back again, Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
I believe there is a God. I believe there's a God who is active in the creation process.
There's only one explanation for it, and it's not a human one. It's the same power that helped a little boy with two fish and five loaves feed a crowd of 5,000 people. And that's the only way that our campaign could be doing what it's doing. And I'm not being facetious, nor am I trying to be trite.
Jesus was too smart to ever run for public office.
Well, you'd think Jesus was running for public office with as much shout-outs as he's getting from the Republican presidential candidates. Welcome back to the show. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. It's 35 after the hour. And as promised, I want to go to this interview that I recorded with the Reverend Barry Lynn. This was on Thursday that I spoke with him as I guest-hosted the Built Press show. And the Reverend Barry Lynn is the head of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And we had quite a discussion about the politics and the preaching that's going in our current politics these days. We have so much going on in the United States with regards to, you know, what I consider to be, I call it the Christian supremacy movement in this country that wants to, you know, kind of merge church and state in this country. And you are the head of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And since you follow this issue, I just wanted to ask, is this something normal in American politics, or are we seeing an increase over the past couple of years with regards to this influx of religion in our political discourse?
Well, I'll tell you, this is the most religion-drenched presidential cycle we've probably ever had in American history. And we've very luckily avoided having things like religious-based political parties through most of the history of the United States. But now increasingly it looks like more candidates are falling back on religious ideas, I'm more religious than you are ideas, in order to gain primary voters, particularly in these early primaries. And I think we're going to see this religion-based campaigning continue through the general elections. There's never been anything like it. It's not healthy for a democracy. And I think people need to cut it out.
Yeah, we see, you know, we go back to the Constitution, and, you know, the Constitution is pretty clear about having no religious tests for any public office in the United States. And, of course, the First Amendment that says there shall be no laws respecting or an establishment of religion. And, of course, the religious folks, what they'll come back and say, and I have a lot of these debates because I'm originally from Idaho, pretty conservative religious area.
Sure.
And a lot of them will come back and say, you know, America was founded as a Christian nation, and that what that whole First Amendment really meant was that the government couldn't establish a state church. Could you debunk that, please? Put that to rest for the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we know is that there were at least five variations of the First Amendment presented to that first Congress, and one of them said Congress shall not establish a national religion. Well, the members of the first Congress rejected that idea because it was too narrow. So they put in those 16 words, Congress shall make no law respecting, which means touching upon, religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. But the basic argument is that this country is better off with a separation of church and state and a secular government, which means, as I keep telling Mr. O'Reilly every time I'm on his show, secular, it means doesn't have a religious function. It doesn't mean hostile to religion. This country's not hostile to religion. 80% of Americans in a new poll say they are at least nominally Christian. They are the majority. They can't impose their will on everybody, and unfortunately that's what the members of the so-called religious right have been trying to do now since the early 70s.
Absolutely. I always like to tell people that America is not a Christian nation. It's a secular nation with a Christian majority. And there's a huge, very important difference in that distinction.
No, there certainly is.
And you referenced this Gallup poll that just came out, and it seems like, according to this Gallup poll, it says that this percentage of religion, of Americans who identify with the Christian religion, is down over some of the decades. In the late 40s, when they identified it, they'd say that about 91% of the people would identify with a Christian religion. Here in 2007, the same Gallup poll is saying 82% are identifying openly with a Christian religion. And that brings me to this quote that I always like to bring up.
If they want a president who doesn't believe in God, there's probably plenty of choices.
With Mike Huckabee in the debate saying if they want a president who doesn't believe, as myself, I'm an atheist myself, or more, I think I'm probably closer to a Jeffersonian deist of some sort here. And who exactly is the candidate out there who doesn't believe in God? Did you catch that by any chance?
Yeah, no, somehow that missed. And you know, in a poll done by a secularist group a few months ago, only Pete Stark, Congressman Pete Stark from California, said he was a non-believer. Everybody else found something to be, if perhaps a Unitarian, but they would never say that they didn't believe in God. Pete's the only one who did. And I think this is an example, sadly, of what Americans do to make this issue worse. They will not go, too many of them, of us, will not accept the answer, my religion is none of your business, or, even more shockingly, I don't have a religion. You know, Bill Bradley used to get reelected in the Senate. He ran for president. He would never talk about religion. He would say he wouldn't talk about it, and then the press didn't keep asking him. This year, we've got people talking about religion. What do they pray for? What are they, what's their favorite Bible verse? And if you start answering those questions, surprise, surprise, the press is going to continue to ask them in more detail, to the point now that we know that Rudy Giuliani does not believe in that Jonah was swallowed by a whale or a big fish, as if that's going to be important. You know, he doesn't have time to believe that because he's had so many women in his life, he can't fit in a whale.
Yeah, you know, if you're not going to follow the biblical prohibitions against adultery, then, you know, the whole Jonah and the whale thing is a little less important, I imagine.
this idea with this
religious test, you know, you mentioned Pete Stark, the only non-believer, declared non-believer in the Congress. And you know, maybe it's just me. I'm getting close to turning 40 here. And so my personal political knowledge doesn't go that far back. But it seems to me it used to just kind of be an impolite thing. It just wasn't culturally accepted to drag your religion out on your sleeve and try to sway voters with that. Where do you point to, if you look back over our political history, where did this start becoming an issue?
Well, I think it started becoming an issue in the early 70s when the so-called religious right started to be organized. And I think many of your listeners probably know this, but they didn't start organizing around abortion rights. They started organizing to try to retain tax exemptions for their private schools that were racist schools that would not allow black students. So they got organized, and then after getting organized, they said, maybe we ought to ask more questions to see if the candidates that we might want to support, either lawfully or unlawfully using their tax-exempt of monies to do so, we better start finding out what they believe. And so then they started using a phrase like, we need to know the heart of our candidates. Well, we know more than their hearts now. We're looking at their auricles and their ventricles and their capillaries. And it's just not a healthy thing for our country. You know, I was just amazed in the Mike Huckabee situation. You got Huckabee's ad, does it have a floating cross? You know, people were obsessed with that. The guy's wearing a Christmas sweater. He said, Jesus is the Christ. He had Silent Night playing behind the advertisement. If there's a floating cross there, it's kind of gravy. We know what he's trying to say. We know who he's trying to appeal to, and it looked pretty successful until last night's polling data that shows that men, apparently in Iowa, are having a little bit of trouble with him now. There is a point where talking about religion too much is going to have a tremendous backlash, and it has had in the Democratic Party in one recent Senate race at least, and I think it may end this as we proceed along the presidential line.
Yeah, and we're speaking with Reverend Barry Lynn here from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And you know what I think? Part of that might be some of those very religious, sincerely religious people who go back and read some of the Gospels of Jesus and read those specific quotes about praying in a closet. Maybe they've read a little bit of that and some of these guys are trying to, you know, especially Huckabee, is trying to play this God card a little too hard. Maybe he's overplayed his hand here.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Now, before we wrap up the interview, just what can we do as Americans, what can we do to help fight back against this religious onslaught? Is there websites or places people can go for more information or to contribute to fighting for a more secular America?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, if you go to www.au.org. You can learn about Americans United, our many projects. We've got lots of lawyers, litigators, lobbyists, a magazine called Church and State, and also to check out a website called www.firstfreedomfirst.org. That's a little project that Americans United is doing with the Interfaith Alliance Foundation. It's asking the hard questions of candidates, you'll find a lot of information on both of those websites, so I'd suggest those. I do have a new book called Piety and Politics, just updated about a month ago, out in paperback now. If people want to get generalized view of how to fight these arguments, including that one that this is a Christian nation. I hope it's a helpful little book for people to pick up, maybe as a New Year's Eve present.
There we go, a New Year, Chinese New Year present. How about that?
Absolutely. Perfect.
We've been speaking with the Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Check out the website at au.org for Americans United. It's also the symbol for gold, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is.
au.org. It's good as gold. Check it out. Thank you. And I just wanted to say one last thing before we let you go here is that sometimes people get afraid of standing up for the secular side or being portrayed as being anti-religious. This is not anything to do with anti-religion. If anything, this is the most pro-religious stance you can take, is to stand up for the separation of church and state so that all churches may flourish, not just one.
I'd have to say an amen to that, and you've got it exactly right. You help the church, you help the state by keeping them both separate. They got different functions. If you believe in one, if you believe in religion, you can believe in any religion. That's a good thing. If you don't believe in any, you can reject them all and still be a first-class American.
That's my interview with the Reverend Barry Lynn from Thursday's Bill Press Show. Big thanks to Barry Lynn from Americans United for the Separation of Church and State for stopping in and giving us that interview. We come back for our last segment of 2007. I'm going to be talking to you in other words. We're going to look back to history and the wise words of politicians past to give us some vision for 2008. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back. By turning loose upon the country a swarm of arrogant bureaucrats and their agents who meddle intolerably in the lives and occupations of our citizens. We charge that there has been corruption in high places and that examples of dishonesty and dishonor have shamed the moral standards of American people. We charge that they have plunged us into an overseas war without the consent of our citizens through their authorized representatives in Congress and have carried on that war without the will to victory. Those other words come to us from the 1952 Republican platform. Yeah, take that, Republicans. Your words are ringing true 55 years later. And one last in other words segment for you here. All over the world, we find a greater interest in the human side of political personality. Human frailty enthralls us. This new politics of distortion and destabilization has paralyzed constructive dialogue. It has confused the public. It has led to a great cynicism across continents about the public leaders. And it is a trend that is intensifying, not diminishing. Political expediency has replaced political idealism. And political expediency has no bounds, no limits, and no taste. This trend, as I said, is consistent across the continents. We cannot afford, ladies and gentlemen, to be distracted from the real issues at hand, building a political consensus for the new political era. I believe that our generation stands at the doorway of history, not only the doorway of a new century, but the doorway of a new millennium. And as we prepare ourselves to meet this new century, this new millennium, I believe we will need to clearly understand the challenges that still await us and await the new century. I believe there are four simultaneous challenges that the world faces today. First, the rise of ethnic and religious hatred, prejudice, and intolerance. Second, the gulf of wealth and health between the developing nations and the developed nations, and within the nations themselves. Third, the growing sense of alienation by the people in a complex and fast-moving world, and the ability of their governments to resolve the problem that the new technology era faces. And fourth, the continuing gender inequity in all societies, West as well as East, that creates social division in the society as we move toward a new century. Those words are the words of the late Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto from 1997 as she gave a speech at the John F. Kennedy School of Government 10 years ago, pointing out all of the problems that we still face today. It's about time we learn from history, Americans. Learn from all of these great leaders from the past who warned us of the path we are currently on today. I'm Radical Russ Belville, closing out 2007. Thank you, everyone, for making this show a success, and I'm glad to hear from all of you. Send me an email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Check out the website, radicalruss.net. For everyone out there, I hope you have a happy, safe, and prosperous new year in 2008, and go Pack Go. We'll see ya. Good day.